Welcome back, folks, and welcome, Mayor, to the studio. We really appreciate you joining us this morning. And so let's jump right in. State legislature dismisses itself. Sine die.
Sine die, yes.
You remember that term.
I sure do. It was the best day.
Term near and dear to your heart.
It was the best day. I think I wore a T-shirt that said that. Yeah.
The worst day for those that hold public office is the day that the legislature goes into session, and the best day is the day they come out of session.
Right.
So in that vein, you guys had a very aggressive legislative package. Mm-hmm. Let's go through that and let's start off there.
Sure. So I knew that going into this legislative session that we needed to be very organized and very clear with our agenda, making sure that our New Orleans delegation knew exactly the bills that we were targeting and what we were trying to get passed, and that I also myself was having constant conversation with leadership as well to get these things passed. So we really focused in on major reforms of entities that would ultimately result in better city services. So we went after a major bill dealing with the Sewage and Water Board, which I'll talk about in just a second. We also looked at moving forward with bills that ultimately would help us in our financial situation, which is why we worked on some retirement bills dealing with the Municipal Police Employee Retirement System. And then on top of that, we also really focused in on some major capital outlay requests, making sure that some very important projects would continue to get funded or get new funding. So first, we started with the Sewage and Water Board legislation. And as you know, the city council and the mayor, even though they're not directly in control of the Sewage and Water Board, they still get all the blame. They get all the blame for all the problems, and the public is still looking at us to fix the issues with the Sewage and Water Board. The issue of really having no real accountability over the Sewage and Water Board lies in the fact that there have been really three entities that have some type of control over the Sewage and Water Board: the state of Louisiana, the governing board, and then also the New Orleans City Council. So what we aim to do during this legislative session is start to gain local control of the Sewage and Water Board, for the city council to be able to move forward different ordinances around budgeting or contracts or projects, whatever it could be, to start getting this entity more in line to what sewer and water systems are like in other parishes, where really it's the city or the parish who are running these particular operations. So that bill, initially when I started to have conversations, you know, I was actually surprised at the fact of the level of support I was getting from leadership in the legislature, also the governor's office. Like, you know what? Go ahead and take it, because the legislature is sick of dealing with it, of us constantly having to go to the legislature for the most minor changes of the Sewage and Water Board, for us not able to address immediate issues quickly because we would have to wait until the session starts to go try to address these issues. And so we started to receive a lot of support, and ultimately the legislation passed overwhelmingly. And so the question, the one kind of pushback that we would get sometimes, Newell, was the, well, then once you get this control, what's next, right? Like, how do you ensure that you are moving forward to create better outcomes for the agency, particularly as you try to move it more under the city's control? So I signed an executive order yesterday morning, and you'll be getting a news release probably in the next 30 minutes or so on this. But so breaking news right here.
There we go. WWE. I like that.
So I signed an executive order
yesterday.
For you, Newell. Yes, that's right. So I signed an executive order yesterday morning. And what this does is it creates a subgroup within the already existing Infrastructure Coordinating Council. And what this subgroup will do is help advise me and members of the city council as we start to propose different policies and ordinances on whether they're kind of the right approach. And the reason why I say this is I may have a great idea around a particular way to fund projects or ways that, you know, I want to do certain things within the Sewage and Water Board. And I may have bond counsel say, wait, Helena, don't do it this way, because if you do it this way, it could cause problems down the line for whatever. So it's just getting...
And that happens. That's real.
And it's real. And so that's why we need a group of really experts in the room to help kind of advise us as we start to propose these different ideas, to make sure that we're not going to do something that is harmful or punitive or make things worse, because the overall approach here is to create better outcomes. And so there needs to be a level of responsibility, organization, and then ultimately reports back to the public, which, by the way, the Infrastructure Coordinating Council is subject to open meetings laws when they meet. And so the reports back from this subgroup will go to the ICC so that everyone can see, like, what we discussed, what would work and what's not, and have an idea of how we will move forward. So that it isn't like everybody's just throwing out a bunch of random ordinances. I want this. JP wants that. Jason Hughes wants. And it's like all scattered and all over the place. It's not a good organized approach to move forward with. And that's why this more focused approach with the right experts in the room, I think, will be helpful.
Well, there's no better way to kill momentum than to have what you just talked about, you know, these multiple competing ordinances,
yes,
and resolutions being adopted and this, that, because you hurry up, you start, you gain momentum, and then something, and then an expert comes in and says, great idea, but this is a triggering event for this, 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 and this, which you can't afford, and you can't go down that path.
Yeah.
So what happens, and I might be jumping ahead, and if
sure.
I am, stop me. So, for instance, when you were talking about some of the plans and the landscape that you were trying to create with the Sewage and Water Board, and the Sewage and Water Board in turn advances a stormwater fee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, and I, when I read the article, it's like, oh my God, I don't understand how this is happening. The mayor is articulating A, B, C, and they come in a completely disruptive and destructive way, I believe. I mean, you don't govern this way and do something very quickly. So
yeah.
How does this change that happenstance, this bill? I mean, and kudos
sure.
to Stephanie Hilferty for
absolutely,
you know, bringing this through the process, you know, and I've said that to her personally as well as publicly, but so how does this change?
Yeah. So once again, let me just say that Stephanie Hilferty, she has just been, you know, on the Sewage and Water Board for many years. And this is probably her greatest accomplishment as far as getting true reforms in the books. And she's been right there all along the way. So let's talk about the board. The board, and I've talked about this before on your show, is predominantly the former mayor's appointments. And you can't force people off this board, and people want to continue to serve. They apparently also want to continue to do things just their way. What I had proposed through Steve Nelson, who is the deputy CAO of infrastructure and who sits in for me for some of these Sewage and Water Board meetings, what I had proposed is that I would like for the Sewage and Water Board stormwater management fee that had been designed by a particular consultant, for this consultant to take a look at potentially different formulas, and also take a look at whether we could do something that's essentially called a parcel fee that gives you more flexibility to not necessarily just spend it on drainage, but you could potentially also, if needed, spend it on sewage or other types of work. And the board just flat out rejected that. So we will go again before the board and ask them, you know, once again, this same request. I'd like for this consultant to just review and do an analysis of other types of potential structures to a fee. And then if they decide not to do it, well, then once again, this will be something that we'll probably bring before the subgroup about the city council being able to pass an ordinance to ultimately gain control of ensuring that contractors are doing what the city council would like as far as a stormwater management fee or parcel fee goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're still burdened with the same governance structure, even in the aftermath of the passage of this bill?
we will have things remain the same until the city council begins passing ordinances.
Okay.
So once they start passing ordinances, then things will begin to change. But as of today, right now, things remain the same. Once the legislation goes into effect, which I believe is August 1, then the city council can start moving ordinances, which is why I wanted to sign that executive order now to put this group together so that, you know, August 2nd, we're ready to go to start filing that legislation.
And I know there might have been something else you wanted to talk about relative to that legislation.
To the Sewage and Water Board legislation? Look, overall, I'll just say this, that this is historic. This is probably the biggest move that's been made in decades as far as reforming the Sewage and Water Board. This is the biggest move that's been made as far as trying to put us in line with other parishes who obviously do a much better job in dealing with their water, sewer, and drainage infrastructure. So, once again, I really hope that this leads to the positive outcomes that it should. And I think putting the right experts in place to advise the council and advise me, I think, is the step that that'll move us in the right direction.
Now, you guys, I know, have been working with FEMA and others on many fronts, one being the JIRR program, which has a lot to do with the roads and the monies that have been unspent for over a decade, if not more. Where do we stand there? I know you put the request in for the extension, and the response was a little bit of an extension, not not enough. Right?
So the FEMA project is called JIRR, and what it is, it's settlement dollars that the city of New Orleans received for Hurricane Katrina, but those settlement dollars didn't start coming in until 2017, right around there. And the dollars are to make road repairs really from top to bottom. So all of the drainage and pipes and everything underneath, all the way to the very top, of course, the paving of the streets and the repairs of the sidewalks. Over the past several years, we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on the repairs, but there's probably about $500 million left in that settlement. Remember, these are our dollars that still need to be spent. The deadline to spend this money was December of 2025. And so at the end of last year, we asked for an extension through 2028. We did not get that extension. We got an extension for only 6 months. And I remember at that time, that decision went all the way up to Kristi Noem. And all she wanted to give us was 6 months. And a lot of it had to do with they wanted to see what this new administration was going to be like, how we were going to have a better coordinated approach to these projects, make sure that these projects were done on time, and with no overages, and what we were doing to hold everybody accountable, that we submitted timely, consistent reports as requested by FEMA. And we were told that if, you know, if we checked all the boxes and we did things right, that we would be eligible for another extension. So we immediately submitted, soon after I took office, for another extension, this one taking us through 2028. And we have had very productive meetings with FEMA, with headquarters, with Region 6. GOSEP is very supportive of this. General Mahfouz had great meetings and conversations with him in support of this extension. And look, bottom line, this is critical. This is absolutely critical. To not be able to do these repairs, that's $500 million. I have to find someplace else to try to get these repairs done.
But let's put this in context, because I think this is important. It's more than the surface road.
It's everything underneath.
It goes right to that stormwater issue that you're talking about well.
It goes to everything underneath. It means the drainage pipes. It means the drinking water pieces that are underneath, all the utility pieces underneath. It's from top to bottom. And the other piece too, Newell, that's important, if we don't get this extension, that means that projects underway right now, we would have to close those projects up. And so, you know, fingers crossed, I've ensured that, you know, I've had folks who are advocates for the city make calls all the way to the White House. I can tell you that Mrs. Benson has been advocating for this, understanding just how significant this is for the city. And obviously, you know, she's looking to have a Super Bowl here in 2031, 2030, something like that. And so obviously she wants those roads looking good for her Super Bowl. But more importantly, just what's best for the city. So we pulled out all the stops, and hopefully, you know, this will be something that gets done. And as I've mentioned, you know, before in previous media articles, is that during Washington Mardi Gras, when Mrs. Benson invited me to go and speak with President Trump, when she was invited to go see him, I mentioned the specific infrastructure needs necessary for this city. So, you know, fingers crossed that we get this extension through 2028. If we get this, this would be a major victory for New Orleans.
So the, excuse me, the extension ends June 30.
That's right.
Do we anticipate hearing something before then?
Yes. Last major meeting that I was part of with FEMA headquarters, we were told that, you know, early June we would be hearing. So really any day, Newell, we should be hearing. I'd also like to mention that some of the folks from Region 6 FEMA headquarters will be in town next week doing a site visit to New Orleans. So obviously I'll be part of that as well, and maybe we'll receive the news then.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yes, keep your fingers crossed, please.
All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Mayor Helena Moreno. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, welcome back. We're in studio with Mayor Helena Moreno. Let's move to adjudicated property task force.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you where I am on
okay.
this. This has been an issue mm-hmm. that I have been really disappointed with mm-hmm. the previous leadership, going back to the Landrieu administration, that originally identified over 30,000 blighted mm-hmm. pieces of property in the aftermath of Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And there was allegedly a plan in place to reduce that. I think we're still mm-hmm. at, you tell me, somewhere north of 20,000 is what I'm told. We didn't make a lot of it, you know, progress on that front. And we got to get these properties back into
yep.
the stream of commerce.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean, it is absolutely critical for this yeah. city to do so. Your
yeah.
thoughts?
Yeah. So obviously, I'm going to agree with you on that we have to get these properties back into commerce. And there's really two buckets. One, there's the blight bucket, where some of those haven't gone to the adjudicated part. But when it comes to adjudicated properties in the city of New Orleans, we have about 6,500 adjudicated properties. And about 4,500 of those have been adjudicated for more than 5 years. We've got a couple of properties that go back to the 1920s that have been adjudicated for that long. So
you're kidding.
I know.
Right?
I mean, it's all in a memo that I
received.
I
mean, when somebody tells you that, what goes through your head?
A lot, but I can't repeat that on the radio.
This is a family show.
That's right, it's a family show. So, but let's talk about this because, you know, obviously there's been work on this in the past, and why didn't that work? And why do I think what I'm planning is the solution? So this is a really big problem. And what I've seen in the past is that they've tried to tackle the whole thing. My brother reminded me the other day of when he and I used to take piano lessons. Our piano teacher, Mrs. Shaw, when we would try to, you know, play a very difficult piece and get so frustrated because it was so big and overwhelming, this piece of music, she would say, just take it a small piece at a time. Take it a small piece at a time, and then ultimately you'll get the whole thing. And so that's what we're doing with the approach we're taking. We're starting a small pilot program where we're getting all the different stakeholders within City Hall and outside City Hall to focus in just initially, and I know it sounds small, on 25 properties. 25 properties that have been incredibly difficult to try to get their title cleared for many, many years. And we're going to focus on those 25 properties and get the process right. And once we get the process right, begin expanding that over and over and over again. But the problem is that we've never been able to get the process right. And I'll tell you this, just going back to the relocation process for the folks who lived in Gordon Plaza, we were dealing with like 50 plus properties at that time. Just to get clear title on those, when we had outside attorneys, we had all these different groups, took us some time, but we did come up with that process. We did figure out the different pieces, and we're able to get it right. So that's what we're focusing on this time. And you know, look, there's some people that you know never believe that anything's going to get any better in the city, but that's just obviously not my frame of mind. And I know that this is a big task, and some believe that nothing's ever going to change. But we will start small, and we will figure it out, and eventually, that's how we chip away at this big problem.
There always seem to be an undercurrent where people fear, you know, consuming political capital, because what it is that you have landowners that are not taking care of their property.
That's right.
Many of them absentee landowners. Some of them have actually deceased.
That's right.
No heirs.
And, or their heirs live some other place in the country.
Heirs live somewhere else, and they don't care. They don't want it. They don't even want it, the expense of getting it out of their name. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go through this adjudicated process, and I'm glad to hear that you're willing to take this on, because many folks have feared this process, and there's really nothing to fear.
But a couple of things. So it's like, you know, whether it's taking on adjudicated properties or taking on our infrastructure needs or taking on the sewage and water board and taking it in, you know, and trying to get that under local control. People have said, it's like, what is she thinking? Like, why would she want to take this on? Well, my response to all of that is, I'm mayor. I got into this job so I could fix things. Like, I didn't get into this job just to keep things the same. So I might as well, you know, do my best to get these things right. And I know that it's going to be hard. These are all heavy lifts. But that's why I brought in such an amazing team of people who are much better and much smarter than me to get things done for the people of the city. And so this is another one of the heavy lifts that we've taken on, and we'll chip away at it. You know, it's like one bite at a time.
So those are those numbers that have already been adjudicated. But I'm told that there are over 20,000 properties that could enter the adjudication process.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's right. And some of them are, and I just was looking at a property that WWL-TV was doing a story on, where, you know, years ago they'd gotten close to adjudication and then, you know, the issue got cleared up. And now the house actually collapsed when they were almost on the cusp of the adjudicated process of going through adjudication again. And so, so there are a lot of those properties that are even prior to that. And so the piece there is really getting code enforcement to work faster and to get the adjudication process to work faster as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk about finances.
Sure.
And where do we stand? You know, I know why you did what you did relative to the Caesars lease. I thought it was brilliant, quite frankly. I mean, you needed to do it. And I've talked about it, and I don't mean to beat up on FEMA in advance of them coming here. But the fact of the matter is that if you don't control it, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And the mindset of this administration is very different than previous mindsets as to disaster recovery, because there are a lot of things that are sitting there that the delay is greater than it's ever been, and the number is greater than it's ever been.
That's right.
So that doesn't bode well for us, right?
That's right. Yeah. And you and I have talked about this before. I couldn't go into hurricane season with having roughly $30 million in our reserves. And so that's why we moved tenaciously to get this deal done. And so now we have over $130-something million now in our reserves, which will look favorably will be something that is viewed favorably by rating agencies, which is going to be helpful for us as well. But we also work very closely with Mike Wagasback, the state legislative auditor. And through his consultation, we have now invested this money with a specific fund where we're getting about 3.3% interest on it right now. And potentially, you know, we could reinvest for even higher gains. And ultimately, what that will result in is a gain of about $37, $38 million over the 9-year life of this entire discounted process that we've gotten the $100 million for the Caesars lease. And so that means that ultimately the dollars that we initially thought we would lose is significantly lower.
You're shrinking the impact.
Absolutely. Almost completely mitigated it. Right. It's almost completely gone. And so I thought that was, you know, really wise advice that we received from the legislative auditor. But let me tell you where we are with our finances. I mean, ultimately, we're going to get out of this in 2027, but things need to still happen for us, for us to just be on sure footing again, beginning in 2027 and out of this fiscal crisis. So obviously, we built up our reserves. We've done a variety of different budget cuts. We've had to do, obviously, the furloughs and some reduction of positions, which, of course, is always difficult. We have 200 less positions now within city government than we did in December of 2025. And so those are some significant reductions there that we've had to do. So what's left is we're working on the sanitation fee with Auditor Wagasback. As you recall, we had to make sure that the number of households was correct, because what the city had and what the Sewage and Water Board was billing for, there was a 30,000 household difference. And so that analysis should be complete by July. So moving forward with the sanitation fee so that the fee covers the cost of service. And once we have that number from the legislative auditor, what it really is, then we'll be able to move forward with that fee. And then the other piece, too, is going to Bond Commission, as we have talked about for quite some time, including the last time we went to Bond Commission, is to ask for one final loan from a banking institution, not the state of Louisiana, but the Bond Commission has to approve it. And this would be a long-term loan that we would move forward with to cover us toward the end of the year, beginning of next year, and then we will be out of it.
Which is not unusual, just for the benefit of listening audience. There are a lot of jurisdictions in the state of Louisiana that borrow money in the back one-third of the year mm-hmm. in order to make it on a cash basis because of the timing of property tax receipts being one time, sales tax being monthly. So that's done. I mean, we used to do it at the sheriff's office. When I became CFO, it was one of my goals to move away mm-hmm. from doing that, and we were able to successfully do so in a very short period of time, and we never did borrow money again in order to make payroll, because it's a very dangerous in practice, but necessary sometimes. Yeah. And obviously, you inherited a quagmire.
One way of looking at it.
I can't. This is a family show, so I can't say what I really want to say. But
and what are our bond counsel and our financing experts, what they have identified is kind of a different long-term loan that we'll be moving forward with this time around. As you recall, last year we did a revenue anticipation note mm-hmm. that we had to pay within 6 months or so, which we have done. We paid back $125 million. We made all of our payments on time. It was very hard. Sometimes we had $30,000 in the bank account, but we made all of our payments and we kept those promises. And so what we're looking for would be a longer-term loan. And once again, this is not any type of bailout from the state. This is not a loan from the state. This is a loan from a banking institution that does require Bond Commission approval. And this is also, once again, we're not moving forward with any of this unless we have, of course, the support of the Louisiana Legislative Auditor. They've looked through all of this, and they are supportive of this move as well.
All right, let's talk about traffic signals.
Okay. I mean, I don't hear about that at all.
When you ran for public office, I don't know the traffic signal was going to be at the top of the priority list, right? Here, and it's kind of an odd thing, right. I guess. But let's talk about it nonetheless.
Well, let me just tell you. I mean, so I'm just going to go back to just a few weeks ago or whatever, and that darn light at Claiborne and Napoleon, just blinking again, you know, and I'm so mad about it that I actually pull over, okay? And I'm like, this is just ridiculous. It's constant. And I call Steve Nelson, and I'm like, what is the deal? And he's like, let me send Donald out. You know, Donald is one of our great guys over at DPW who has to go reset the lights. So he comes out there, and Donald tries to fix it. And I'm like, Donald, what is the deal here? He's like, oh, it's just every time it rains. And so I call Steve, and I'm like, Steve, what's going on with our lights every time it rains? And he's like, it is every time it rains. So then he starts, you know, digging a little deeper, finds out that sure enough, every time it rains, many of our intersections go to flash mode, where the lights start blinking. Because it's been well known for quite some time, potentially years, that there's water intrusion in some of the wiring for these intersections. Now, instead of thinking, well, if there's water intrusion in some of the wires, we should go fix it. We should go fix it so there's no more water intrusion. Nope. Instead, it was just, oh, every time it rains, just get ready to send people out to go reset the lights. So I thought that this was just insane, as did Steve. So that's when we launched this plan to assess all the intersections and then get the plan in place to start fixing the wiring and make sure there's no water intrusion. And in fact, I'll be with DOTD tomorrow because they're going to help us with the lights on Claiborne. Thank you, Jesus. Okay, the lights on Claiborne. So I'll be out there with them. And Steve is hoping to have some of the wiring repaired, you know, by the end of next week even for some of those lights. So that's where we're at. But once again, it's like, why are we just going to, like, oh, well, this is a problem. I guess this is just how it is. And let's just move on go home.
I'm laughing. I'm laughing because I had a similar problem. Mm-hmm. And I identified it was water intrusion on a wire connection.
Yeah.
So I get on the internet and I order this can of a gel that you spray on it. And it fills the little canister. Uh-huh. And there's no more water intrusion.
Can you send me a link to that?
Yeah. It's like $1.49. Yeah. I mean, it's like insane.
So now we're working to fix that. And then after that, we do have to ultimately do a whole revamp and upgrade of our traffic light system. With that, we're going to focus on federal earmarks coming up. We'll request those in 2027. Just because, I mean, other cities, it's really through a cell phone that you can reset a light. You don't have to go to the actual location.
Yeah.
So one of our guys, you know, at 9 o'clock at night on a Sunday, he can fix it on his cell phone and not have to wait until Monday morning.
All righty. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're visiting with Mayor Helena Moreno. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with the mayor, Helena Moreno. Helena, let me say congratulations to you, your administration, the Landry administration, the lieutenant governor, and New Orleans and Company, Mark Romig, who was the front person for the Sail 250 event. I went out Sunday. I was just blown away by the crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was huge, and it was hot.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no doubt summer is here if you were out there on Sunday.
Right.
But everybody was having a great time, a lot of families, people smiling. I mean, it was just a great feel. And I know you were probably there almost every day, right?
Yes, I really was part of events Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And look, I'll have to say this. What was so great was that, you know, I was talking to visitors coming in from all parts of the country and also all different parts of the world. And they had such amazing things to say about our city, just how welcoming and hospitable the city of New Orleans was. And, of course, amazing food. Everybody talks about our food. And just how much they appreciated our culture and how they were able to walk around our beautiful city and see the impacts that places across the world have had on New Orleans. So whether it's Latin America, whether it's French, Spanish, African, like they could see it all. And so I thought that was really good to hear. But overall, I thought it was a great event. You know, great job to New Orleans and Company, Mark Romig, Walt Leger. I mean, they knocked it out the park. My team really appreciated working with them. And working with the lieutenant governor, state of Louisiana, I mean, everybody really came together for this event. And of course, we had a lot of assistance as well from our law enforcement partners, making sure that everybody felt safe and secure. And it was just a great family event, a free event along the riverfront, really to recognize our city's history, the impact of the maritime industry, celebrate, you know, our country's 250th anniversary, and also to meet people from all across the world. So
and
very
a shout
cool
out to the dock board as well.
Absolutely, to the port. The port did a great job.
The port did a great job. And it really highlighted the importance of what's out there.
Sure.
You know,
that's right.
Waldenburg Park and the moonwalk and all of that.
That's right.
I mean, it just, And, you know, as we do these extensions, the new extension at the end,
that's right.
I spent some time out there for French Quarter Fest. That's beautiful.
It's outstanding. And look, this event was such a success that Walt Leger and I, as we were sitting next to each other at the blessing of the fleet, as we were sending the vessels away to their next stop, he and I were talking. It's like, we have to figure out a way to do this somehow annually. We have to figure out a way how to really grow Fleet Week and have this be some kind of now annual summer event here in the city of New Orleans, just due to the fact that the reception for it was just outstanding. We got people from across our region, across our state, country, and world.
Yeah. I'd love to find out what the OC rates were for the hotels and stuff.
Absolutely.
I have to imagine they were pretty strong, because there were a lot of people, as you said, within driving distance
sure.
that came to the city, which is what we need.
That's right.
New dollars,
That's
new
right.
wallets coming to the city. She's smiling,
That's
folks.
That's right. That's right. But you know what we also need is we also need to boost the international traveler. We've had a reduction in international travelers. Really, that started right before COVID, and it was exacerbated during COVID. And so that's something that New Orleans and Company is really focusing in on. And as I mentioned, we had people from all across the world here in New Orleans and spreading the message that New Orleans is a great place to come visit. And so hopefully it'll help with boosting that as well.
Well, we have a lot of momentum. The Michelin rated restaurants,
that's
you
right.
know, Beaucoup
yes.
d'Or,
yes.
That's here. You know, we have a lot of folks that are really great cheerleaders for us internationally, and you got to grab that momentum. In fact, the Lieutenant Governor is going to be on the show tomorrow. You know, again, we've talked about this Canadian thing where, you know, a lot of the tariffs and the negative mm-hmm. impact of, mm-hmm. of that and the way that Canadians have kind of viewed the U.S. Vegas, I was reading an article the other day. I didn't realize how many Canadians are
That's
gamblers.
Right. And it has significantly impacted their tourism rates.
It has hurt them
absolutely
in a big, big way. And there's a lesson to be a lesson learned there, right?
Well, and I'll say this: you know, there were actually some folks from Canada who were here for Sail 250, and I had conversations with them, and they would like to figure out that path where the city of New Orleans could have a stronger partnership with Canada. And I'm like, I'm all in. Let me know when you want to talk, you know,
absolutely.
And get those visitors here to New Orleans.
We've got a lot of French-speaking Acadians that will be happy to welcome you.
That's right. That's right.
The Normans are one of them.
There you go. There you go. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule. We truly appreciate it. My listening audience always looks forward to the time spent here. We love your approach and your willingness to talk about these issues. They're very difficult. I agree with you. Managing expectations may mm-hmm. be the toughest thing, because now that we've had some successes under our belt,
that's right.
I'm sure you feel it. The yearn is more now than it's ever been.
Look, I mean, people want things fixed, and they want things fixed now. And so, you know, just know that every day we are chipping away at these problems. I wish I could just turn that light switch, you know, and have everything be totally repaired and totally fixed. But that's impossible. But that doesn't mean that we won't get there. We will get there. It's just going to be a piece at a time.
Well, if you find that magic wand, I have a long list of things. All right, we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. We were teasing someone. We waited to the bitter end. Go ahead, Elena.
Just wanted to say hello to the first gentleman, Chris Meeks. He's a big fan of the show.
We got it in.
That's right. We got the shout out in. All right. Thanks, Newell.